This is the Manufacturing Report. I'm Scott Paul.
The consumer gets it, and they got it from day one. They walked in and they said, finally a place we can support our city.
You might think the only thing made in Washington, D.C. are laws, and that the process looks a little like sausage making. And you know, there's a little truth to that, of course, but if you walk a few blocks up from the White House to Washington's DuPont Circle neighborhood, you'll find Shop Made in D.C. Now, like other made local enterprises, it's getting a lot of attention these days, all over our nation, from farmers markets to craft fairs to farm-to-table restaurants, local craft beers, distilleries. Consumers are looking next door, as well as online, for goods and services they need. And you know, that's a good thing for artisans, craftspeople, and entrepreneurs who want to keep things made in the USA. Kat Adams of the AAM team sat down with Stacy Price, the co-founder of Shop Made in DC, to learn more about the effort in our nation's capital. That interview next on the Manufacturing Report. Let's get started.
This is Kat Adams from AAM. I'm sitting with Stacy Price, co-founder of Shop Made in DC. We are surrounded by things made in DC. Everything from baby onesies to barbecue sauce, I believe. And in the back behind us, we have food, all made in D.C. as well. Two fast casual options are available. You recently cycled those in, so very exciting. And we're actually coming to the close of 3 months of operation now for Shop Made in D.C., which opened in October. So, Stacy, I know some of our readers and audience have already been introduced to Shop Made in D.C., but could you tell us a little bit about the founding of it? You know, had the process of opening this store and opening this venture, because I know a lot of people had to come together to make this happen.
Thanks for having me, Kat. It's been something that's been in the works for a really long time. This summer, we always knew that we wanted to support this class of business owners in a different way. I've spent my career supporting as like a cheerleader for local business and driving local economic development through business and specifically through commerce. And I've found myself connected to this maker class, and my business partner is, you know, he has a brewery, so technically he's a maker, and he owns multiple concepts. And we came together probably 5 years ago and started talking about what would it be like to support this this sector in business in a different way. And we have had various versions on paper of these incubator type concepts that would allow low entry to marketplace for the maker class. And some of the business plans had a cafe attached to it. Some of them had maker space attached to it. And we almost signed leases on a multitude of spaces and kind of put the project to the side until this summer, when Golden Triangle Bid had reached out to us and said that they had a property owner that had a property that was going to sit vacant until the building was remodeled, but they were interested in doing something different with the space if somebody could do something really interesting and impactful. And so I looked at the space, and it felt perfect. The ball just started rolling after that.
That's amazing. I think, you know, what you're doing here is such a cutting edge of retail as well. You know, we look around the country, and unfortunately a lot of stores are closing. Many of these like department stores that have been in business for sometimes centuries. And customers are just not coming anymore because they want something more personal, something that's an experience. And I feel like you've offered that here, which is really amazing. Not only can you have kind of a personal connection with the makers who are featured here. You know, every item has a placard, a card identifying the maker and their history, but also the food is adding a whole other element to it. It's really amazing. I'm wondering what kind of reception you've had so far.
Retail's not dead, just in case you guys were wondering.
I appreciate that,
We got confirmation of that over the last 3 months, and really had a holiday season that kind of blew us away. It was really great. I'm happy to say that we've written close to $170,000 worth of checks to makers.
Oh my gosh, that's wonderful.
It just feels amazing to support these people. That's what it's about. Yeah. And the consumer gets what we're doing. I didn't the things that I thought would be hard about this have actually been the easy parts, and the easy parts have been the hard parts, which I guess would be the case of any business owner. But I really thought that we would need more messaging and more explanation to the consumer to tell them what we were doing. I never thought that the consumer would walk in and say, oh, this is a cool new store, and then we'd have to train our staff to really tell the story. But the consumer gets it, and they got it from day one. They walked in and they said, finally a place we can support our city. And people, they've been shopping. The consumer behavior, I owned a retail store a decade ago for 7 years, and so I know retail a little bit, and I've like run a ton of marketplaces around the city, and I watched the consumer in here be different than any consumer I've ever seen, because I think they understand this like social enterprise part of what we're doing, and they're here because they need something, and also because they're excited to share what their city looks like to whomever it is that they're getting that item for, or if it's an item that they're putting in their house, they're proud that it shows where they live and tells a little bit about the fabric of their day-to-day lives.
Buying into a community in a lot of ways, supporting that is amazing. You talked about a milestone kind of that came up with the holiday season. Have there been any other kind of situations or points that you've reached where you feel like this is really becoming more and more of its own part of DuPont Circle and of DC?
Well, just a personal, exciting piece of this, the Phillips Collection came to us about a month ago and said, what would it be like if we had an ongoing partnership and we had a little shop made in D.C. inside of our museum store, and we had an ongoing Makers Unplugged series. And so we are, this is the first time I'm saying it aloud without the permission of the Phillips Collection communication team, but we are as of February 1st, we're doing their After Five series with them, three stars, two bars, all local. I have like makers in here leading tours around the museum talking about how this institution, which is like right behind us, has influenced their work, and we will launch a collection in their space in just a couple of weeks. So that personally, it's my favorite personal museum in the city. And so that to me felt like normally things I have to go knock on other people's doors for. And so the fact that they came to us just felt like we're doing the right thing. I constantly have affirmation from our customers and partners and neighbors that we're doing the right thing.
Yeah, that's wonderful to have someone come to you too and recognize you as, you know, a major player within defining what DC is. It's really remarkable. If you have many plans, it sounds like, for the future, part of the Phillips Collection, is there anything else that you have coming up that you're excited to share?
We have, nothing as concrete and substantial as that, but we've really, now that we're 3 whole months old, we're all doing, we're able to pull back a little bit and really think about what it is that we want for this space and what we want for this concept and this retail model. And so, you know, people will start seeing in the space lots more classes and workshops and other creative activations of our brick and mortar space that we have. We're working on a e-commerce platform that, you know, hopefully we'll start to see soon of other ways to engage that consumer in this maker culture. And I'm working on a made-to-market curriculum that will hopefully get makers that are not retail ready into this space. Because I have to tell you, Kat, that's been the hardest thing. We knew it going in that we really needed a high-level retail ready maker. And I kind of have my own personal like classification for makers. And so I knew that I needed a class 3 or 4 maker in here. And what we realized is that we pushed the limits of even a class 4 maker in terms of the demand and how much product we needed from them on a weekly basis to be able to be in this space and to continue to be featured. And so I had a maker yesterday tell me that we surpassed, it was a packaged food product. We were bigger than his Whole Foods accounts. and and that we have both helped him scale. We almost broke his business, he said, and we have helped him scale and move his business forward because he saw that breaking point of what he could supply and what needed to happen for him to be able to move forward. And so I think that we'll see more of that, and that really limits who we bring in here, right?
Right.
So we want to make sure that we're taking those people that we're not quite ready to accept in here, and we're getting them ready, retail ready for those experiences.
That's huge. Yeah. Do you have any tips for makers who are looking to do that?
I mean, it's really just like figuring out, you know, for him, it was about he has this lovely line of Indian products, and that includes a cracker, and it was taking him 30 minutes to do like one run of crackers, and like we needed cases and cases and cases and cases of crackers to be able to fulfill orders, and so he had to figure out like pretty quickly when your orders start to scale, you realize that those things that are taking you more time or more resources don't work, and so you have to come up with new plans. You can't hand label everything you are, you know, fulfilling 20 cases at a time. That begins not to make sense. So really looking at what each piece of your packaging and sourcing costs you, and not just costs you in terms of dry good, but actual production time. How much of your time are you spending on that? And figuring out how you source that out and how you have more lean production. That's the only way that scaling makes sense. Or a lot of times we'll find people and they have a really great product, Kat, but their packaging isn't such that is sellable to the consumer. And so figuring out, you know, I want us to help figure out how we link together resources, like monetary resources and design resources to help these people that actually have something that I think is better than a lot of things on market, but it just needs to look a certain way so that the consumer is willing to buy it as a giftable product in a space like this.
It's amazing though that you've had situations that have already inspired makers to kind of build that up and build these resources and take advantage of resources that you provided.
Yeah,
which is really tremendous. I can see you've added products, I believe, from when I was last here in October,
We launched in October thinking that we only had space to support 25 makers.
Yeah.
I think at one point in this conversation, there was going to be 12 featured makers, you know?
Yeah.
But we quickly realized that we have a lot more space in here. And so we kept the first round of makers through the second round.
Smart, yeah.
The first round really was always our evergreens anyway. Mm-hmm. There were people that we felt like were sure bets, you know. We here in this like moving model that we have, this ever-changing model, we wanted to make sure the first group of people that we brought in were people that were these stage 3-4 makers that had been in market for a while, and so we kept them around for round two, and we layered another 25 makers on top of that.
Wow.
So we actually have 58 makers on the floor right now.
Oh my goodness, that is amazing. Oh my gosh.
And there's space for more.
That's wild.
So you'll see us, we're about to layer our third layer of maker in here, and you'll see us keep, it's so hard, we're going to have to rotate out some of the people that are in here. I'm like, oh, but maybe you'll come back a little later. But we'll layer on top again.
Gosh.
Smaller footprints, like not featured makers,
right.
But we'll layer another round of featured makers on top of that.
When are you expecting to make that transition?
The beginning of February.
February.
I'm just checking, like I'm dotting my I's and crossing my T's right now.
Yeah.
We, because of our partnership with the city, everyone has to be in the Made in DC program, and so we're getting everybody legit right now.
It's amazing, yeah. It's a great program already. Yeah.
And so we've started bringing in, like I brought in a new card line last week, and so I'm like slowly adding those people And laughing at myself that the original plan of this is that we'd have this hard and fast switchover of the whole store, and we're learning, you know, we're an experiment in motion. That does not make sense. We don't have a hard and fast, but I do have a date in which the cycle will be complete, and then we do a Meet the Maker event. We've been doing these Meet the Maker events every time we have a new class of people, and it's been great. The consumer loves it. They come out and they get to meet the people that are making the products, and the makers come and they have a drink with one another, and they just enjoy being in the space. So that's been also a very fun element of this. We have kind of become this clubhouse.
Yeah, you've been doing First Fridays as well within DuPont Circle, if I recall. Yeah, that's a lot of community events.
Yeah.
It's kind of a testament to how powerful, you know, producing a product, selling a product in a local area, right, can be in creating a sense of community, creating, drawing people in, and creating those bonds. What are some of the makers that are your mainstays, or can you talk a little bit about what you have in the store right now for people who are thinking about coming?
I tell people we're the coolest gift store you'll ever go in.
That's a great description.
We always have all the categories of those items that if you're wanting to go into a gift store or boutique, you're going to find cards, jewelry, home, candles, ceramics, art, packaged food product, and then we rotate, you know, the people. There's not one. People always ask me, like, who's your favorite? And I'm like, oh, my God, how much time do you have?
Yeah.
Because what's really amazing for us is that the people's products that we carry are just, like, really good-hearted people that are passionate about what they're doing. And you feel that. You feel that in their work, and you feel that in their spirit. And so they're just lovely. I'm very excited that for years in this kind of DC maker culture, I've been working with John Y. I don't know if you know of John, but makes, I used to use him as a poster child for Made in DC when we would talk, because he had been around at that time. When I was leading Think Local, it was a decade. So now it's like, 15 years? But he makes these leather belts and T-shirts and bags.
Yeah.
And he's just really this super cool guy with really great products. But what I love is that he's grown so much, right? Mm-hmm. So he tells the story about how he was in college. He just didn't care much.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, nothing interested him. And so, like, he didn't know what he was going to do with his life until he made his first belt.
Gosh.
And he made this product, and it gave him purpose. And so he went from, like, making in the garage of his parents' house to, you know, having millions of dollars worth of equipment in a makerspace in Brooklyn. And now he works out of a space that is near D.C. Brow. And he, you know, he has multiple staff members. And he just really
Tremendous success.
And so I love that story of growth, and also it's going to be really fun to carry his cool products in here. So he will drop off tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. So we're excited to add him into the mix.
Yeah.
And then there's a lovely man. We have these beautiful illustrations by this artist. His business is, Mendina. And I saw him at a market, and I went up to him and I said, do you have a business license? And he kind of, like, you know, looked like most artists do, because they just don't. He got legit in 2 days. He came back to me in 2 days, and he was like, I have a business license. I'm certified Made in DC. When do I get on your shelves?
Aww.
And so he's been so lovely to work with, because he's so humbled and surprised that people love his stuff. And it's those people that I love to write those checks to, you know? It's
okay.
So that's, you know, the story of two people in the space.
And tremendous,
we just moved in our new food concepts for January, and they're all women-owned businesses.
Yes,
and so that
love
feels fun. I mean, I just told the story of two men, so I'll tell the story
please,
of the
love
women
that.
In the space.
Yeah.
But, and, you know, it's fun. We have, like, a whole variety. We have 7 different chicken soups on the menu, and we have these wonderful cold pressed juices and smoothies. And, like, you know, there's lots of bumps in the beginning of, like, how do we work this system? And they're doing business in a way that they haven't, and so they will leave here having not only grown their revenue, but grown as business people, like, anytime you're in a new situation. And so that's been really fun to have, you know, a new set of women really, like, rocking it.
It's so wonderful, too. You come in, and as you say, you see so many different faces, but you get to enjoy the food as well. I mean, that's a huge part of it. You know, you come in, you get a coffee, shop a little bit. Love that. How do you people join, become makers, or part of the food incubator?
So we still have a splash page up on our website. New website coming soon, I promise. But you can you click a button that says I want to become a featured maker, and you fill out a form, and I go to that list to curate from every month. Those makers I make sure are part of the Made in DC program, and so they can either start with the Made in DC program and come to me, or they can come to me and then go to it. You know, it really doesn't matter which direction. And you know, we're already we've got our February food concepts lined up, but we don't have March. So we are really curating. And same with, I don't have my April round of makers. I'm constantly looking for new people, and I want to do that in real time. So as people get ready and come online, we have space for them, and so that we're not, like, curating too far out and not leaving room for the people that are getting themselves up to speed, like, you know, Carlos that I found at the street festival.
That's amazing,
Because that to me is the element of discovery and surprise, and what personally actually makes it fun for me to do. So
yeah, that's amazing. You've accomplished so much so far already, and I think people, whenever they come here, they're going to have so much to find, so many discoveries for themselves.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for sitting down with me. I really appreciate it. Yeah. I can't wait to see what happens next.
Yeah, me too.
Very cool.
I want to thank the J.C. Price, co-founder of Shop Made in D.C., interviewed by Kat Adams of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. You can find out more about Shop Made in D.C. on their website, shopmadeindc.com, on Facebook at Shop Made in D.C., or in person at their store in the DuPont Circle neighborhood of Washington, D.C. That will do it for the Manufacturing Report for this week. You can find this and past episodes on iTunes and SoundCloud, and you can find out more about AAM on our website, AmericanManufacturing.org. I want to thank the great teams at E18 and AAM, and in particular, Kat Adams, for making this episode possible. Thanks again for joining us, and please tune in later this month. Together, we can keep it made in America.